Welcome to an all-new episode of the McFuture Podcast. I'm Steve Factor, and today I have an unbelievable guest, comedian Jim Jefferies. I almost said Australian comedian Jim Jefferies, which as you listen to the episode, you'll understand why that is not the right way to approach it. Anyway, let me jump right into it. Ever have a thought that's so dark and so inappropriate that the only way to handle it is drowning it out by playing ABBA? Or turning it into some sort of joke? Well, I decided to put mine into this podcast. It's the sort of darkness that actually made me see the light. And I think it'll do the same thing for you. It might just rekindle your faith in humanity. I hope you're intrigued at least a little bit. Now, as you might have seen this weekend on Real Time with Bill Maher, comedian Jim Jefferies told Piers Morgan to fuck off.
There is no Muslim ban. If there was,
fuck off.
Okay.
It's a fucking Muslim ban.
Okay.
This
is the point. This is a talk about the hysteria. I'm talking about 85% of the world's Muslims are allowed into the country.
This is what you do, Piers. You say, he hasn't done this, he hasn't done that, he's not going to do all these things. Give him a fucking chance, mate. And you know what I mean?
Why not?
Hitler didn't kill the Jews on the first day. He worked up to it.
Mate.
I have to stop you.
That is the exact ridiculous, hysterical, over-the-top nonsense.
If people
that he's
got
afraid,
hysterical in Germany
like you,
right away, then it wouldn't have...
He's not the new Hitler.
You just like that you won The Apprentice and you have a famous friend, mate. That's all you fucking like.
I say one thing?
I know
that's all you like.
You're losing your audience.
I'm not losing my audience.
Because you're sounding unpleasant.
Am I losing
you're also
it?
Not basically...
Now, that's pretty much what you'd expect from two foreigners debating American Trumpology. But the event went so viral that even Harry Potter's mom, J.K. Rowling, and a bunch of other A-listers, they all piled on Piers Morgan and started going after him on social media. Now, the fireworks were no surprise to me. I've been a huge Jim Jefferies fan since about 2008, and his comedy is raunchy, it's cutting. If Ernest Hemingway had a drinking buddy, it would be Jim Jefferies. And each of his specials has gotten better and better. And there's this one bit from his last special, which is called Free Dumb, that inspired maybe one of the darkest and also most optimistic essays I've ever written. I decided to get Jim on the podcast, which, by the way, was no easy feat, to discuss this beautiful monstrosity I created with him directly. First, let's listen to the clip that inspired me.
Now, imagine that the world is a train track and society is a train. And as society has always had to do, the train has to move forward. Because if it stops moving forward, we will run out of resources around the train because we're stationary. And the gears will lock up and the vines will take over. So it has to keep going forward. Now, in this train, we have the people in the engine room, the people who are running the show. And those people in our society who run the show are scientists. These are the people who are inventing medicines for you to live longer and surgeries for you to live longer and finding alternative fuel sources and engineers that are making machines that run more efficiently, right? Now, all these people are scientists. Now, whether you like it or not, scientists are primarily atheists. And they're all in the front carriage dragging us along. Now, in the second carriage, we have a bunch of cunts that I don't think getting fucking enough flack. Agnostics. These fucking wishy-washy fucks. They're all standing around the second carriage going, who knows? You know, maybe there is a God, maybe there isn't a God, maybe your God and your God are the same God. Like, I know there was a Big Bang, but who made the Big Bang? And I wouldn't consider myself, you know, religious, but I am spiritual. And then there's this last carriage, and the last carriage is 50 times bigger than the other two carriages combined, and it's carrying the rest of the population of the human race. And it's just filled with cunts wearing hats for reasons they don't know. And growing beards because they think they have to, and some of the women are covering their faces and cowering. Everyone's dancing around going, man on a cloud, man on a cloud. And there are so many of these cunts that the train is hardly fucking moving. And the people in the engine room are like this. If I just pull this peg here... Do you know how fast we'd be moving?
So after listening to this, I was gripped by this very dark, menacing thought. The stupid only exist at the leisure of the smart. The weak only exist by the grace of the strong. The poor exist at the pleasure of the rich. And there are two things that are keeping the powerful ones from pulling the pin. And I'll explain what those two things are in a second. Now, let's face it. There are 62 people in the world that control half the world's wealth. And there are only 7 global nuclear superpowers. So even a dim-witted receptionist could fit all the world's money, power, and firepower into one mid-sized conference room at the Ramada. So let's take this analogy up a notch. Let's say that every conspiracy theorist in the world is right. Let's say that the world's rich and powerful already party together at Davos, at Bilderberg, and the annual Illuminati Naked Twister tournament. And while wearing these goat heads in the grotto and having sex, they're hatching these globalist plans for world domination. Let's say that's actually happening. If the thought of the Koch brothers and Carlos Slim and Vladimir Putin and Angela Merkel frolicking naked in a pool of champagne and gold flakes, if that doesn't scare you, consider this. What exactly is keeping these elites from pulling the pin? They have access to the greatest engineers, thinkers, and leaders that are driving society's train. How long do you realistically think it would take them to figure out exactly who's slowing us the fuck down? Or which dogmas have to die in order for us to move faster? So why waste breath and resources trying to convince a bunch of idiots that vaccines matter, or that the earth is round, or that evolution happened, or that we actually landed on the moon? When the problem can be eradicated in a matter of hours. Remember, these are the most powerful people on earth. They could have all the beachfront property in the world if they did this. So yeah, they'd get some terrible PR and maybe a spirited skewering on SNL. Alec Baldwin would have a field day, if he lives. I asked Jim, why don't smart people pull the pin?
What stops the smart from doing it, first of all, is common decency. Because the religious and all that will always fight against the smart. Even okay, if the train was reversed and the engine was in the third carriage and the smart people were at the back carriage, the train would hardly be moving. I said in another special, we have to walk as slow as our slowest person, or people fall behind. If we start to speed up to the rate of our smartest people, people will just fucking leave them out in the desert and they'll just fucking die. You know what I mean? And that's not the right thing to do. But also, if you were to do it, as smart as they might be and as right as they might be, they also have a tendency to fucking have a lust for power. And that corrupts. And as soon as you have a corrupt society, you have an unfair society. As soon as you have an unfair society, you have a dictatorship starts to come in. And that's basically what we're talking about. If we marginalize these people because they don't deserve a vote, because they're not smart enough, because they'll do the wrong thing, which they will. Mm-hmm. But you can't. It's common decency. That's why you don't do it.
But is it just our humanity? I think there's one other reason. Capitalism. Yeah, capitalism. All right, just stay with me. I know this sounds a little crazy, but it's about to get a little crazier before it calms down. When the U.S. conquered Hitler and the Axis powers, something really insane happened in the world for the first time in history. Instead of enslaving and murdering and raping and pillaging, I don't even know what pillaging is, but it's apparently something you do after you conquer somebody. So instead of doing all that to our fallen enemies and all of our rivals, you know what we did? And when I say we, the United States, we rebuilt them. Germany, Japan, the rest of Europe, even Russia could have been our slaves. We could have populated, colonized, and taxed the shit out of them with zero resistance, just like the Romans did back in the day. But instead, the world's first and only superpower took on the greatest modern act of humanity, nation building, and investment that has ever taken place. And this reconstruction, it benefited everybody. Even the two biggest instigators, Germany and Japan, they became massive success stories and also huge allies and trading partners. The reconstruction created tons of jobs. It took people out of poverty and it drove innovation. So capitalism and global trade, what they do is they make us accountable to each other. It gives our actions global consequences. It exposes every one of our decisions to global scorn and judgment that might directly affect our ability to survive. And don't think for a minute that this is just some theoretical exercise. This exact scenario is playing out right now in the Middle East. Whatever side you're on when it comes to Israel and Palestine, doesn't matter. One thing that's undeniable, Israel is a tiny, modern, wealthy democracy with some of the most sophisticated science and technology and weapons on earth. They can grow tomatoes in sand, in fucking sand. And at the same time, it's surrounded by neighbors who want them wiped off the map. And Israelis, they're always facing missile attacks and stabbings and bombings. And don't get me wrong, life's no picnic for the Palestinians either, but that's not the point I'm making here. If Israel chose to act like almost every single conqueror throughout history, or even Syria today, Palestine would be gone. Just like ISIS kills all the men in every village it occupies, or like the Turks in the 20s killed 2 million Armenians, or the Hutus got rid of 70% of Tutsis. Now imagine if any of them had Israel's firepower. Israel has the tools to eliminate all of its enemies in one afternoon. And I'm not exaggerating, literally one afternoon. And then without hostile neighbors, it could dedicate 100% of its resources to building a more comfortable life for its citizens and have more land to do it on. So it sounds like this huge win, right? But it isn't. The world's scorn would crush them. And I'm not talking about militarily. I'm talking about financially. They would be ruined. If Israel wasn't dependent on aid from the US, trade with Turkey, tech acquisitions by Google, it would be a whole lot easier to pull that pin. Then humanity would be their sole deterrent. Would everyone be cool with that? Why does this matter? I think there are three reasons this matters. The first is interdependence. Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, they kind of put free trade back on the radar, and they argued with varying degrees of coherence that trade deals hurt American workers. Now, there is some truth to that, but it's only because we poured gas on the inevitable. We opened the borders too quickly before retooling our workers. That's our fault. That's not the fault of free trade or any of our trading partners. Now, make no mistake, the more countries depend on each other financially, the more peaceful the world will be. There's a link in the show notes to a really great episode of Planet Money about Cordell Hull. He dedicated his life to the idea that global trade is a recipe for peace. And after World War II, he finally convinced FDR of that idea. And ever since opening borders and creating more trade, the world has become more peaceful than ever. I know it doesn't seem like it a lot of the time, but if you look at the stats, and I've included the link, it's irrefutable. So just like we celebrate Independence Day, maybe we should also celebrate Interdependence Day, because it's our reliance on each other that will move us forward. We just need to do it better. Now, the second reason this is important, I think this unpinning is already happening. Look, I want progress. I want this train to move as fast as possible. I want to live for 200 years. I want painless surgeries and nanobots and tons of leisure. I could fill that time with travel and delicacies and creativity. But I won't get to do any of it if we keep dragging our asses on this stupid train, or if that train separates. I fear that that separation's already happening. That first car is pulling away. If you look at the US and even all over the world, wealth, education, and opportunity, they're concentrating faster than ever. The religious, the undereducated, the poor, a lot of them are falling behind. And what worries me most is that last car is moving away from the ideas that brought them prosperity in the first place, which is global trade and having power in the hands of the many instead of the few. So Jim Jefferies, I asked him about it. I gave him my theory. Jim was less worried about the last car separating.
I don't think the people in the last train are falling behind because they're not using technology or whatever like that. The fact is, they've had a bigger voice ever from the internet.
He saw a slightly different problem.
If you look at the net, you can steer your brain to believe whatever you want it to believe because there's enough information in any pathway that you want to go to. And the problem is that we only interact with people who are similar to us on the internet and in social media and stuff like that. So we're only being fed the same information. So if I log onto a site and say we didn't land on the moon, then I'll read a whole lot of stuff that will convince me we didn't land on the moon. And then all of a sudden there'll be links sent to my Facebook that are like, hey, another proof that the moon landing doesn't exist. And then within the space of a few months, I'm adamant that there is no moon landing. The people who are watching me talk about Trump being an idiot, they've already put in Trump's an idiot in another thing. And they're being fed Trump's an idiot, Trump's an idiot. So all these people are like, you're a genius, you're a fucking genius. And then other people are sending the same clip by listening to what this Aussie fucking idiot has to say, and they're sending it out to all those people, and then there's just a whole ring of comments on the same section that this guy's a fucking moron, this guy should go back to Australia, and then in the other section all the comments are good, and we're all being fed information that will, you know, keep us happy. So do I think they're falling behind? No, I think the only thing is no one's falling behind, no one's falling ahead, all we're doing is falling further apart. And that can't be good.
I love that line. Now, the third reason this is important is why I did this piece in the first place. This is a plea for humility and for introspection. I'd love to believe that I'm in the first car driving this train. But the truth is, there are a lot of people smarter, more powerful, and quite honestly, more useful to humanity than me. So there's a pretty good chance I'm in the caboose packed in with the other numbskulls with podcasts. Maybe we should embrace that possibility. So next time we bump into someone from that first car, instead of offering our opinions and ideas, maybe bring a pen and paper instead. It might be the only way to the front. I just hope I get there before they pull the pin. And by the way, the elites themselves may not get to drive forever. Artificial intelligence might take over the whole train, or maybe someday decide no train is necessary. I just can't end on a good note, can I? Anyway, stay tuned. There's a little bonus at the end about how Trump almost won Jim Jefferies over. Hope you enjoyed this. Please go on iTunes and rate this podcast 5 stars so that way it gets it more visibility. And tell a friend, share it with others. I'm Steve Factor. Join me next week on The McFuture. Here's a little bonus from my conversation with Jim Jefferies. I was going to stick it into the main episode, but it just didn't feel like it belonged. But a lot of people are probably wondering why an Australian comic is so involved in US politics in the first place. Well, there's a really good explanation for it.
First, is it exhausting lecturing Americans about politics in an Australian accent? Like, why did you choose to take this on?
It's probably less than 5% of what I do on stage, but it's the bit that keeps on going around the internet, and it's the bit that people want to talk about, you know. I find it bizarre that my nationality is always brought into question. Even the people who support me, when they put a clip up of me, they have to say Australian comedian. They don't even say my name. They just say Australian comedian gives Trump or whatever. And you're like, what difference does it make where it's from? I live here. I have an American child. I pay American taxes. I work in America. So, and I've lived here for 8 years now. So it's like, if I was to talk about Australian politics, that would be contrived because I don't live there and I don't know what's going on. So why does my accent have to be so connected to what I'm talking about is ridiculous to me. And no time during the Trump routine do I bring up Australia or reference Australia or anything like that. It's just, I haven't lived in Australia since I was 20 years old. I'm 39 now. It's been a long time.
No, I think I know where that line is. That line is whether you're a citizen or not. Because I was born in Kiev in the Ukraine. So, you know, I can say the exact same things if I wanted to. And no one would give me shit because I went through the citizenship process. It's that one piece of paper that is the line between you getting shit or not getting it.
Right. Well, I raised an American citizen. I will get my citizenship. I haven't had my green card for long enough to get it yet. But also, even if I had it, the fact is they don't even know if I have it. No one's even asked me. You're the first person to ask me. So no one knows. They just want to go. And then people go, well, you're not from here. Why even comment? And I'll tell you why. Let's say I just got here last week. Biggest country in the world, biggest economic power on the planet. Everything in your politics affects the rest of the world. The rest of the world is watching. And so, you know, there's no reason that me and John Oliver and Ricky Gervais and all these comics that are overseas are talking about your politics. We'd be talking about American politics right now. If I was in Australia, I'd still be talking about it. And if I was in Britain, I'd still be talking about them because we'd be getting this on the news as well. So, of course, we're allowed to comment on it. Also, an outsider's point of view should be taken note of. Someone who's lived in a culture without guns, for instance, and then can talk about gun control in America. Someone who's lived in, even if you've lived in a communist country, you've lived in a socialist country, you've lived in a country that has medical coverage or whatever, there's goods and bads you can take from any culture and say, well, this doesn't work here, this works here, this doesn't work here. I'm not saying that the rest of the world is perfect. It obviously isn't. But the fact that foreign people should just be discounted for what they reference. And also, Americans stick their nose at everyone else's politics. Always have. And I have no problem with this. You're the superpower.
Yeah, you'd think we had some wars going or some invasions out there.
Well, also, just giving your opinions on which country should be allowed nuclear weapons and which country can't. You know,
yeah.
By the way, I agree with you. I agree with you in what you're doing when it comes to that. But it's still foreign policy. The fact that you have what is Trump like on foreign policy, and then when a foreigner talks about your policy to go, you shut your fucking mouth, is super offensive.
You must have been very excited watching Trump's speech last night.
He's like, he said so many different things. That, like he said, I'm going to fix the TSA. And I never knew that everyone else thought the TSA was fucked. But I travel so much. I was like, oh, wow, what are you going to do? Like, I want the TSA. You know, I travel so much. And then I was like, I'll vote for you if you fix that. And then I'm like, wait a minute. He got me for a second. Stop it. He just said he's going to fix things. He's going to do this. I'm going to do that. Everything's going to be magical. It's like when he says make America great again, what era is he talking about? Are we just going back to George Bush? Like last time there was Republicans, was that the glory time when was the streets paved with gold back then? I can't remember.
Yeah, I don't think minorities are necessarily looking for any historical period and saying, yeah, that's the one. That's the one that was great.
I think Reagan's when they thought it was awesome. But I wasn't living here during Reagan, so I can't tell you whether it was or it wasn't. But I know there was a Cold War going on. I know that there must have been a bit of tension going about. But allegedly, they thought that was fucking killer.
The thing that happens in a Cold War is you have an enemy to unite you. You know, so you've got people who now are facing in the same direction as opposed to eating away at each other, which is what we're doing now.
Yeah, yeah, right, Dan. That's a good point.
All right, this is really it. This is the end of this episode. I will see you next week. I'm Steve Factor for the McFuture.